and computer lab, rationalizing its networks and wiring, and removing excess and obsolete equipment. They can also use your creativity and artistic skills to make a more aesthetically pleasing space. I'm not sure how it could be any more aesthetically pleasing, but someone will figure that out. So the action is noon to 5, followed by a reception from 5 to 7. It's a good way of getting into the community, helping out, and putting our beliefs about environmentalism where our workspace is. To get involved in planning for the event, to volunteer, or for more information, visit encuentro5.org. That's E-N-C-U-E-N-T-R-O, numeral 5. .org, or you can call 617-482-6300.
Presente, our Howard Zinn and the Freedom to Write, this Sunday, October 3rd at 2 p.m. Here, Helene Atwan, Martin Espada, Mark Favreau, and David Zirin discussing the legacy of Howard Zinn and the Freedom to Write. Co-sponsored by PEN New England, panel discussion features writers and editors reflecting on Zinn's influence on their careers and their publishing houses. That'll be held at the Cambridge Forum at 3 Church Street in Harvard Square. Visit cambridgeforum.org for more information or call 617-495-2727.
Goodness, how do we run out of time already? Okay, almost done. Next Wednesday, October 6th, the Jamaica Plain Forum presents the Beehive Collective, which will give a presentation on the true cost of coal, mountaintop removal, and the fight for our future. Long exploited as a resource extraction colony, the Appalachian Mountains have undergone the most extreme, devastating form of coal mining, mountaintop removal. The Beehive Design Collective has created the True Cost of Coal graphic, an elaborate narrative illustration that visually explores the interconnections between energy, resource extraction, climate change, and grassroots resiliency. This image is a patchwork quilt of anecdotes, statistics, and history with stories of how coal mining and mountaintop removal affects communities and ecosystems throughout Appalachia and beyond. That's next Wednesday, October 6th, from 7 to 9 p.m. at the First Church in Jamaica Plain, Unitarian Universalist, at 6 Elliott Street, near that big monument thingy. For more information, visit jamaicaplainforum.org. You want to end with a short one?
Yeah, I'll just briefly mention that the 4th annual Boston Palestine Film Festival starts tonight and continues through October 10th, featuring films, panel discussions, comedy, music, and more. This year's festival is dedicated to the memory of Sharif Fahm, a Boston area resident and longtime Palestine human rights activist, peacemaker, and radio host. I don't see here where it's located, but
It's taking place in a lot of different venues.
Yes, Museum of Fine Arts, Harvard Film Archive, Harvard University. Anyway, for more information, you can visit BostonPalestineFilmFest.org.
And I think we need to become more ethereal now, as it's 7:01 p.m. So we're going to get rid of that backbeat and start moving into something a little more comfortable for human beings. The views and opinions expressed on this program have been those of the participants and have not necessarily been those of the staff and management of WMBR, the Technology Broadcasting Corporation, or the Massachusetts Institute of Technology. You've been listening to What's Left. I'm Linda. That was Mark. Thanks to Sophia for joining us all the way from Ecuador. And we'll be back next week, so far as we know, unless the FBI comes to the door. And even then, I don't see any reason not to be on the radio. Stay tuned for Music for Human Beings, coming up as soon as they float on in here. You're listening to WMBR in Cambridge. Stay dry.
Yes, marhaban, marhaban to you. I am a Dr. Jalis al-Sakran, and I welcome you. Love is not always as gentle. But it can be enlightening to sew your own clothing. I am joined this evening by Erno. Erno, welcome.
Thank you, Doctor. As always, it's a pleasure.
Pleasure indeed. We are also joined by Zoro, the numerologist. Zoro.
Bienvenue. I am quite comforted by the rain today.
That's very strange. I didn't expect you to say that. Most people aren't comforted by rain. But I like to look on and be an optimist about the situation, for if you imagine if we lived in a universe where the sun was made of water and shot water instead of photons at us, today would indeed be a sunny day.
Mm.
And if you look at it in that respect, then we should be happy, for today is a beautiful day.
As is every day.
Indeed. Indeed.
Yes. Comforted by the rain, are you also comforted by the snow?
The snow is a very good thing as well. In fact, it falls more slowly, and it's very comforting, I believe, to watch.
I believe, however, it breaks my analogy. How could we possibly have a sun made of snow? I mean, that's just ridiculous.
Yes, the sun is quite hot.
Indeed. Rain, I mean, that's believable. That is a universe in a metaphysical sense with stars made of rain is somewhat more believable than that with stars made of snow. Do you agree, Zoro?
In fact, you can see this universe, I think, if you stare into the rain illuminated by a lamppost. It shines, it shimmers with points of light. It's a universe made of rain.
Indeed, perhaps in that universe, the lamppost would actually be something like a fire hydrant, for it would be giving off water.
Instead of light.
And perhaps would the clouds then, would they be sources of fire? As in,
so they would be stars.
Indeed.
And to punish us, God would rain down rain from the heavens.
Well, as always, the program is not about us raining down upon you, but us all joining together in a collaborative pool. So if you would like to dive into
the storm, a storm of human consciousness and will.
A human storm. So if you would like to rain in our storm, the number is 617-253-8810. Caller, welcome.
Yes, Dr. Jalis.
Yes.
You mentioned, do you like to sew your own clothing?
Yes, I feel...
Do you have a sewing machine?
Well, I think there is some dishonesty in the use of the machine. So I prefer to stitch by hand or even crochet.
Well, now you've got me a bit confused. I had a sewing machine, and in the proper season, of course, I would use it to plant bits of cloth and clothing and rag into the soil, and then with the turn of the seasons, we would reap the harvest.
A harvest of sweaters. Or
now,
perhaps pants.
I believe this is okay if you build the machine by hand. It's a really a lesson about the value of your own work.
Yes, you definitely sow and you reap what you sow. Much as the fir tree, it is said, my friend, gives us fur for coats. And it also gives us wool in the wintertime.
A wool tree? Or does wool perhaps come from a bush?
I believe it's a moss.
It's a moss.
A bush may be very good at pulling the wool over your eyes.
So, Connor, tell us how it is that you came about the idea of planting clothing.
I was listening one day to a radio show, and the man was talking about sewing his clothing. So I ran out immediately, and I bought the machine, and I did it myself, but I did not hear the conclusion of the program.
I see. So, but it is also by the effort of a machine.
That's very interesting. It highlights the modern dependence upon these machines.
Indeed, we have to wonder where this leads our existence if we
but
become so.
But what really is a machine? It was Archimedes say the screw, the lever, the shovel, I don't know.
Perhaps the machines are really just images of ourselves.
And
a snowblower?
Extensions, I think, perhaps.
Projections.
I actually think this is an interesting point because one of the basic machines is the wedge. And the needle is very much like a wedge. So I wonder if even the use of the needle would be regarded as the use of a machine.
Doctor, do you see yourself as a wedge in this projection? Are you a wedge?
It's interesting because the wedge, typically the use is to separate two materials or to split a single block.
But in the case of sewing, you use this much smaller wedge to join several things.
And in a sense, a keystone which holds an arch together is really wedge-shaped as well.
And is not the Archimedes screw also a bit of a wedge, as the little wedges of the water are wedged up the side of the tube of the pipe?
Yes.
A screw, like a corkscrew, like a snowblower.
It is a wedge unioned with the spiral.
I think we may have lost the caller there. On that note, but indeed the screw is not one of the simple machines. I think the screw is a combination lever with a wedge.
Indeed, and in fact, I see myself really as less of a wedge and more of a lever. So maybe the screw, being the combination of both, is really the projection of this program. Of this show, because here we have the wedge and the lever.
The wedge, which is used for binding, and the lever, which is used for dropping.
I think the purpose of the lever is to convert the positions of one object into the positions of another.
Well, let us enter a state of joining with another caller. Caller, marhaban.
Marhaban to you. I was reminded of what you're talking about, of a cone. I wonder if you could help me to share some light on this. The cone goes, how does a blind man know when to stop wiping? So, do you know?
I do not believe a wedge is the answer to this question, but it is reverberating in my mind.
A wedge. I think the cone requires meditation, caller. Can you tell us about your own feelings about it?
About the wedge?
About the
poem.
The blind wiper.
You know, smell maybe? I don't know, but that was my only guess. I was thinking maybe the seeing eye dog could maybe take a look for him, but and then bark. But I don't. That seems a little complex. But then again, I mean, those dogs are pretty smart. So who knows?
You know, I'm beginning to think this is less of a poem and more of a riddle.
Yeah. No, it's a cone. K-O-A-N. The ancient
cone.
Yeah. So that is sort of a riddle. Cone.
Yes.
But why is feeling not sufficient for wiping?
Well, it's just a little dirty, you know. I mean, you don't really feel with your. I don't know. Maybe do you? Are you a feeler? I'm a looker. I just look. Take a look.
Can you describe how that is possible?
Just with mirrors, or are you very flexible?
I just look at the teepee.
See, caller, I think our ancestors...
I'm trusting the TP, you know, that's sort of taking a leap, because I don't really know what the real state
I think there is a leap there, because in ancient times, or if you have ever traveled in the woods, a white cloth or toilet paper is not always available. It is not clear by looking at the overgrowth.
Yes, perhaps, caller, in this area of life, you may need to take a less
maybe some
materialistic view, perhaps a leap of faith to get you over this hurdle.
To listen to your own body and what it is telling you about it. Let's bring another voice in to perhaps shed light and help us see ourselves.
Hello.
Yes, caller, welcome.
Hello?
Caller, welcome.
Am I the right caller?
Hello.
I'm sensing a very strong cat vibe from this person. Very feline presence.
Caller?
I'm sorry, can you ask me that again?
I said you smell through the airwaves like a cat person. Are you?
Cat. Am I a cat person?
Do you like cats? Are you a cat?
Catfish?
Catfish? Or tuna?
Catfish.
Yeah, I know, right? Fried or smoked, though?
Smoked.
In a skittle or on a skedaddle? You gotta choose one.
Skittle.
Ah, okay. That's interesting. I would have chosen the skedaddle.
Me too.
And I am definitely a fried catfish man myself.
I'm completely lost. Now, a moment ago, caller, and if you are just joining us, caller, we were discussing how it is that the blind man would know when wiping had completed. And we realized that even the person who is not blind cannot rely on vision to determine the end point of the wiping. And I wondered what you, caller, would use.
What I would use?
What mechanism do you use in order to know that you are finished, that it is ready for you to reemerge from your solitude into society? To interact again safely with others.
After I have communed with God.
So, following a visit to the restroom, you take a period of communion with God?
During the restroom and after the restroom.
Can you share with us, how does that, is there a ritual or a prayer?
I pray about different things, whatever is on my mind at that given time. If it's something that happened 10 minutes ago that was stressful, I'll pray about it.
Indeed.
And when I leave it there.
Maybe this approach is what more people should take, because the thing that I am realizing from this extended conversation about wiping is that we as human beings are indeed much more limited than I ever imagined. I mean, really, really, if we can't even know truly about what's going on in this situation, what do we know?
What you're doing, you're focusing more on the wiping than the moment of silence and peace. And aloneness with yourself.
So I appreciate,
and God.
I appreciate that point, because it really is an issue of leaving something behind entirely. How does one?
You are eliminating.
And how is one certain that they are not still attached to this thing which was recently a part of you?
You're eliminating all the impurities. And you're cleansing yourself.
I think
in the same way you're cleansing your mind at the same time. Mm. Are you speaking to God?
This is good to both perform a ritual materially and in your mind and with God, as you say.
Cleansing physical and spiritual,
at the
mental.
Same time.
Yes.
Exactly.
Wonderful way to look at it.
But I think the point about separation is a critical one, because I think that there is something spiritual there. I think it's maybe hard to see, but there are people who cannot leave things behind.
Exactly.
There are permanent attachments that are formed, emotional, sometimes physical. And if it were a physical separation problem...
Even with constipation. Constipation is something they're retaining.
And so this
you're
is...
You're not able to release...
In a physical way. And if it is a problem, it may have to be fixed.
Maybe a spiritual problem.
Surgically.
Exactly. If it goes on too long, you will pass away.
But
I'm a nurse also.
But in the spiritual, if it is a spiritual separation problem, how does one heal?
You would have to go into constant prayer. And whatever issue that is bothering you, you need to address it and focus on it.
And in the extreme...
Instead of trying to... People tend to avoid what is right in front of them. The answer is right in front of you. But we tend to seek outside of ourselves to get answers from others, instead of seeking God and looking into ourselves to get the proper answers, mm-hmm. so we can release it and move on.
And I think it's very helpful to speak with others. It's the mental laxative, if you will,
To commune and
to
speak with others is one thing, but to take what they're saying to you and make it a reality in your life, in your world, as an answer, is not the answer.
Yes, indeed, buying the bottle of laxatives.
It
won't do anything unless you physically make them a part of you and who you are. So in this sense, you have to really absorb the advice that other people give you and what you get from your prayers. It can't just be a
one
shallow
exactly.
shallow attempt. It has to be true.
Well,
if you would
like to join with us and to share and to help us separate, the number is 617-253-8810, and we have room for one more caller. Caller, welcome.
Yeah, I'm just wondering if you guys are done yet gazing into your crystal bowl and talking about what you've been talking about. This show needs an enema, and I'm coming through to clear it out like a white tornado so we can leave this behind.
It really is an issue.
It sounds like he's constipated.
It does sound like that, and I think that there is some quality of the voice and the intonation which reveals this. But I do think, I think that the enema, the spiritual enema, or the mental enema, is it is a valuable thing. How does one spiritually cleanse? What is the, what is that? What is the equivalent?
Well, I believe to take into your mind something something fluid, but clear, and something which can permeate any of the crevices of your mind. Is the idea
a spiritual broth, if you will?
I was thinking something of a mental floss.
See, I was thinking that you would be able to, I would light some incense, some sandalwood incense, in order to do a cleansing. I would also have some herbs in a hot kettle, maybe some mint, some sandalwood, and some cloves.
Now, this is good from the physical perspective, but philosophically,
while you're doing that, you can be chanting and praying to God.
But, see, I wonder if this is the spiritual, if this is the equivalent thing, because there is something very cleansing about connecting with an established belief that you may have, of acknowledging a great creative spirit, if that is what your beliefs lead you to.
Well, it would be for me to ask God, where is it that I'm stuck? Because obviously I am not clean, and I cannot release it.
So, your cleansing, you take in God. This is good.
And then I would read His word. I would close my eyes and pray, meditate, and then ask Him to lead me to the answer.
Perhaps, caller, our analogy and our metaphor breaks down here. Perhaps a spiritual cleansing has to be an ongoing thing. It cannot just be a one-time thing that happens over 30 minutes to an hour.
It's a continual process.
So, caller, in your nursing practice, do you find that patients often will have both a spiritual and a medical issue?
A lot of their physical issues is because of their spiritual. They are not spiritually
aligned.
There's something lacking. I shouldn't say all the time, but we find that a lot of the time when a patient is sick, they are also spiritually sick at the same time.
Yes, I've noticed this personally among people that I've met, that you have someone who is, their life is not in order, and the stress manifests itself physically, and that they
exactly.
So there is an absence of balance, which can be restored with an appropriate attention to spiritual matters.
And it's very much the same balance as the four humors, I believe. If one thing is out, you put a little more of another and compensate.
And caller, how long have you been a nurse?
I have been a nurse for 27 years. And I've worked, my last job was the ICU and the emergency room. And so I've experienced death a lot, and guiding somebody from the physical world into the spiritual world.
That there is an appreciation, there has to be an appreciation for something beyond the corporeal, something beyond the corpse, the body.
There is. I myself, when I have bathed the patient and have prepared the body to be removed and go to the morgue, I have prayed the whole time and talked to that person's spirit, because you've established some sort of rapport or relationship with that patient if you're bathing them and they passed away on your shift under your care. And
perhaps this perhaps this moment is really the ultimate cleansing, the shedding of the physical to move on.
I've lived a long time, but have had very limited experience with death, and I think that part of being human is having some fear of the moment of death, of separation.
Are you in fear of death?
I'm sorry? In fear?
Are you in fear of dying?
I think there are some elements of fear. I think that I think there was a realization at one point that a teacher gave me, which was that I was afraid of something I did not know, but there was a time when I had not lived, and I do not remember suffering or pain from the time before my birth, so I should not fear these things for the moments after my death.
And I think also it is also that sometimes you experience anxiety for things that you anticipate and are curious about too. It's
maybe it's anxiety of the unknown. But if you study the world, then I have no anxiety. I used to fear death, and my mother used to always say to me that she's ready to go at any moment. She said, "I'm ready for God to take me now." And I used to cringe and say, "Mommy, how can you say that?" And she said, "Because I am one with God. I am at peace. I know when I go that I'm going to a better world, a better place. I'm going to be with God." And she said it with such conviction. And I didn't understand it then. And now, at 47 years old, and a survivor of a traumatic car accident, and I had no time but to sit still. And by sitting still, I spiritually became closer to God by reading His Word and calling on Him to get well, and knowing that He loves me.
It's strange. This fear of death is such a human
I'm not
thing.
Fearful. I'm not fearful anymore. Mm-hmm.
This is a very touching story, Calder.
But you have to imagine everyone must have points in their life where they feel this way. It's such a human thing because there's nothing we could possibly know about death. And as human beings, we always seek to go out and categorize and to put everything into piles that we understand and to organize the universe. But this is something we just can't organize on our own physically.
No, we cannot. But we can imagine. We can read His Word and picture a life beyond this world that we know it as it is. Humans, physically on this earth. From dust we came, and from dust we shall return. So I'm not afraid of the physical aspects of my body. I want to make sure that my spiritual aspects of me is righteous and humble and graceful. So I can go to that spiritual world.
And there is so much energy devoted to finding a way for people to live longer, to possibly live forever. If given the option, would you take that, caller?
I would live until the Lord wants me, because we have no can. I love life, enjoy life. So I would live until whenever that time comes. Would I ask somebody to make a magical pill to make me live forever? No, because I already know spiritually I'm going to live forever.
Yes, I believe if I was given this option, I would delay the choice as long as I could.
Indeed. Though assuming you were the only one given that choice, would you even want it? I mean, you'd end up living in a world that wasn't meant for you, with people you've never met and can't relate to, because you are
exactly
what, 150, 200 years old.
Correct. Because it's not normal.
Let's bring another voice in to share this issue with us. Caller, welcome.
Yes, whereas I would... Hello?
Yes, welcome, caller.
Yeah, whereas I would take that pill in a second, because I'm a strict materialist.
Interesting.
And I believe that all spirits and souls and gods and devils and phantoms are just patterns in our head without objective correlates.
Now, caller, even as being a materialist, I wonder, would you still want to live forever if given the choice?
Yes.
Well, caller, and bringing this back to our earlier question, how do you feel about death? Is there a lot of fear?
There's fear of the moment of dying.
What are you afraid of?
Would you say you're more afraid of the actual, the moment, how it happens? For instance, car crash, falling off a cliff, freak explosion.
Knowing that there was a last time that I arose from my bed, knowing that there was a last time I kissed my wife, petted my cat, whatever, anything, knowing that there had been an ending and there was going to be no more, does disturb me. I know all the good philosophic reasons why it shouldn't, but it does anyway.
It's a very...
Timor mortis contorbit me.
It's a very oppressive thought I find in my own life sometimes. So I sympathize with the fear of death.
But caller, how do you cope with this fear?
By trying to live whilst I'm still alive, and which is another way of saying by forgetting about it.
So bringing the time horizon of your life close, so not considering the moment.
Mm-hmm. But it's funny, because I was just thinking that if given the choice, would I be as a beast, not knowing that I must someday die? I asked myself, would I accept that if given the choice? And the answer shot back immediately, yes, in a second, in a shot.
But
so you would choose ignorance?
I think so.
No.
Not necessarily ignorance of things which might kill me and which I might need to avoid, or things that might...
It's interesting. You call yourself a strict materialist, and I wonder, do you value knowledge?
Yes, I do.
But
not all knowledge is equally valuable or equally useful.
Because I feel that you are devaluing the awareness of your own mortality.
I think I sympathize with the caller here, because it is so easy for certain facts to cripple one, to send a person into panic, unable to operate.
What is the use of inevitability except as an excuse for giving up?
Excuse for giving up? What does giving up have to do with the realization that we do not live forever,
in the
physical sense?
Caller, I think to me, even in the absence of the possibility of a durable spiritual existence, there are a few things that make me value death. One of these is that it forces me to instantly empathize with everyone, because there is some element of fear, there is some experience that no one can avoid.
Yes, death, it creates a universal truth.
Well, so would everyone being punched in the forehead at the age of three.
Yes, but in my experience, this is not inevitable.
Right, but I'm saying that if it were, it would be inevitable and it would be common, but there wouldn't be any particular value to it.
Because it is something that we, none of us, we could look back on it, but not look toward it. There is something unique about death. It's like, I think it would be more similar to all of us being required to move to Mars and then never be in contact with any of the people in our previous life.
I think I'd like that.
But the point is that even though it is not as severe as death, instantly there is an empathy, there is some relationship that we all have. And death is such a universal thing that there is a natural brotherhood which we are forced into.
Also,
there is an appreciation we must make for the moments of our lives. We have to reflect.
Also, the presence of a definite, certain end, really, it's really integral to progress, to change in our lives. For if things just went on forever, nothing would happen. What would be the point?
And
what would be the point of even aiming for any goals?
Exactly, that's my point.
I can't accept that. I've heard that quite often, and it just seems like essentially a form of sour grapes. I think I could have quite a fulfilling life even without the threat of death hanging over me.
Well, I think that is an important point. And the truth is that even if a person's existence completely ceases at the moment of death, it does not imply that the life had no meaning.
In fact, it gives it more meaning, is my opinion.
I'm not sure of that, but certainly I don't think it deprives the life of meaning, simply because it will not. It is a selfish view that it has to have an effect on the person.
Well, we have to move on.
Thank you. Bye.
I think that death, it forces us to choose our lives. And if we could all live forever, we would not have to value tomorrow more than 50 years from now. If you want to do anything, you can just put it on the list, and eventually it will get done.
Mm. Well, the beauty of death is that we leave this realm and our children are able to grow up and take on our legacy. Mm. To die is to leave a legacy. But to leave a legacy is beautiful.
But caller, I think then we are depriving a person who is infertile from meaning, and that life still has meaning. Let's bring another caller on board. If you'd like to join in, the number is 617-253-8810. Caller, marhaban.
Hello.
Welcome, caller.
Thanks for taking my call. Such a cold evening.
Thank you for listening.
I was just curious to know where you guys were headed with this conversation. And I wonder if my radio is not too loud. I'm kind of enjoying the music.
No, caller. I think we are just letting ourselves be guided by the discussion.
Actually, my last thought was on this word legacy, and I think fertile or infertile, the legacy of a man is his immortality.
So legacy extending beyond biological progeny.
The sociological, the psychological imprint that one will leave upon society.
Hmm.
Exactly.
But then again, in the extreme, the person who is isolated, who is alone.
And yet, there is still a mark in having lived. is not the world different for your having been?
The person that is alone can still leave. They can still leave a biological realm of themselves if they're donated their sperm or their egg.
So once again, in the extreme,
life
extreme,
still goes on. In the extreme,
if one were to take a child and to remove them from the planet, but not to kill them, to force them into an existence in isolation, has the person then deprived that infant of meaning?
That's an interesting question.
No, that infant would develop their own being.
And so,
what they did do though, they left that infant without a mother or a father, an image to know from which they came from.
And their personality would be quite interesting, but if it was developed in a bubble outside of the planet, but still in the general universe.
Genetically, they will still have a makeup of you in some form or fashion due to the chromosomes.
Unless it's too cold.
And the genetic makeup on each link and chain.
I think this is a sign that this concept of immortality and of history, the future and the past, is very intimately tied to humanity's consciousness, humanity's history of itself, its own ongoing discoveries and processes.
And the ultimate question, of course, is that if there is nothing to fear in death, if there are no consequences to having died, then is murder a crime?
Ah, yes.
If there was no fear in death, then there really wouldn't be, this world would be mayhem.
People
would be killing each other. There wouldn't be any civil existence as we know it now.
Well, and even if to take the life of someone who is quite peaceful, as you said earlier, it is God's choice when we will die. And if a man takes another man's life, it is an affront to God, regardless of the victim's own objections or
so
lack thereof.
It is a violation of some universal plan.
I think this is an acceptable viewpoint, yes.
But if this is the case, if a violation from the plan is a crime, then isn't any action taken with free will a violation of a plan? I mean, that would imply that buying a Snickers bar is a crime.
If you do it
should you
with
have
your
been
own
meant
will.
For Milky Way.
If you inflict death upon someone, death
if
is
you do it,
upon
if you do
you
it
anyway.
In opposition to God's will. If he wanted you to have a Snickers and you got the Milky Way.
See, I mean, I think that
do you believe in karma?
Do I personally?
Yes. I mean karma people that tell me that they do not believe in God, I ask them, do they believe in karma? And they say, yes, I believe in karma. Well, the Lord says we reap what we sow.
In other words, maybe you can have the Snickers and the Milky Way if you get the one before the Snickers.
So when a person says that they do not believe in God, yet they believe in karma, they are indirectly agreeing with me in the fact that there is a God.
I see. It's a believing in God in another name.
Exactly.
And there are many names
it's
for God. There are many manifestations
denial.
Of this concept. So I think that believing in one a name of God and another name of God, it's not really different and then not really wrong.
No, I appreciate this, but
it's true. It's not really wrong, but if you don't give it an... If it's the fact that they didn't put a name to the karma. The name they gave God the name karma instead of God. Because when you ask, do you believe in karma, they say yes. Then you believe in God. In other words, they substituted God's name and placed karma.
Caller, though, there's one important difference. I believe with karma, it's almost an impersonal concept.
No. What I'm saying, that makes them basically in denial of God's existence.
Right. I think the point that caller is making is that if you accept a spirit, universal force, an objective universal force, whether it is personal or impersonal, this you could label this as God.
But there are
people who do not believe in any objective reality. That's simply that the reality is a subjective experience.
That is true.
There is no karma. There is no God.
Mm.
And I'm not sure that. I disagree with these people, but I'm not sure that it is valuable to argue.
And now I heard you agreeing with this subjective reality, caller. Is it possible? I raised the question to everyone. In a subjective reality, to consider anything material as being real.
That's a very interesting question. It's very hard to separate what is in front of you and what you're feeling is real. And because those things are not...
I'm sorry, caller, we appear to be losing you there. My own view, Zorro, is that if one is a subjectivist, if one insists on a subjective reality only, then the existence of any object, whether or not it is real, is completely determined by the person's experience of it.
Yes, it's kind of frightening to see if reality is subjective. How can we be linked to one another, and how can we know that our connections among each other are real things?
And indeed, if we can't, this is the question I would have for caller number two: is if the universe is subjective, and if we really, if things don't have meaning, and there's no certainty that they're real, what's the point of extending our life onwards to infinity?
Things do have meaning. The world was created by three spirits, the Father, the Son, and the Holy Ghost, which made it one. Without that connection, we would not even be existing. Without the Father, the Son, and the Holy Ghost, you and I would not be speaking on this phone. The phone wouldn't exist. This conversation wouldn't even be existing.
Yes,
there wouldn't be any beings. For the Father and Son, and the Holy Ghost created us, this world. The concept of the universe.
I think we are clear on your point of view of the matter. It's just unfortunate that we seem to have lost our other caller. Who the question was directed at primarily.
And I think that it is difficult to predicate logically on this sort of belief. Because I do not share that particular belief, but I have my own beliefs about an objective being, but still the truth that I predicate my mind on is my own existence first.
And indeed, do we come to that inevitable point, Doctor?
Indeed, separation is difficult.
It is our weekly death.
But caller, it was our pleasure very sincerely to speak with you.
I enjoy speaking with both of you. I finally was able to communicate with people that understand me.
Well, thank you for joining us this evening, and thanks to our many callers who called in and we could not get to. Thanks also to Erno.
Thank you, Doctor. As always, it's a pleasure.
And thanks to Zorro.
Yes, thank you as well.
I am a Dr. Jalis Sakran here on Music for Human. Music for Human is New Age Talk Radio with an emphasis on you. We are here every Friday at 7 p.m. on WMBR Cambridge 88.1 FM. Stay tuned next for Hipster Happy Hour. Ma'asalama.
Points for safety.
Number one,
cars and bikes stop at red lights.
It's against the law for car drivers or bicycle riders to ignore traffic signals.
So don't buzz through red lights. There might be a pedestrian or turning car that doesn't see you coming.
Number two,
look first before you open your door.
Numerous bicyclists have been injured or even killed by car doors suddenly opening into them.
Look first, and bicyclists, stay out of the door zone.
Number three,
cross with the signal.
You are safest if you wait for a walk or green traffic signal.
Don't jaywalk. That's just walking into trouble.
Number four,
cars and bikes should stop for pedestrians and unsignalized crosswalks.
Be nice. Be legal. Be safe.
Brought to you as a public service by the Cambridge Bicycle Committee and this station.
Welcome to another edition of Hipster Happy Hour. It's hipsterific. Yeah, that's right. This is the new catchphrase now. Anyway, we have some great music coming up. Tonight's show is punk rock. This show is almost entirely punk rock. Again, it's a repeat of something I've done in the past. Got some tunes by The Fall, got some tunes from Jawbox, and more coming up in the next hour. And stay tuned for that. This is your host, Stiegmeister J. And let's start off with a tune from Circulatory System. That's not punk rock. Don't worry, punk rock's coming.